supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. As National Gun Violence Awareness Month continues, Helen Ubinis organized her third annual Fill the Steps event in Philadelphia today. The Daily News columnist says she wants to highlight the voices that few hear when it comes to gun violence. WHYY's Darrell C. Murphy reports.
About 250 young people stood on the steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Many held signs bearing names and pictures of lost loved ones while students called for solidarity and gun law reform. Helen Ubinis says she organized the event to give young people a platform to share their vision.
We should all be very inspired by what Philadelphia students are doing and how they're thinking, because in many ways we have the leaders that we're seeing in Florida right here in Philadelphia.
Mayor Jim Kenney says the city is doing its best to address the problem, but state and federal lawmakers are making it difficult to reduce access to illegal guns. Naya Dupree, a student at Building 21, says politicians value guns more than black lives.
We get shot every day. There's no laws. There's nothing is being done about us being killed every day in the streets. So when the day comes that I'm as important as a gun, then that's the day that I'll be happy.
Siani Newkirk, a student at Parkway Center City, says she knows a lot of people who've lost someone. She herself lost a cousin in 2010. She says lawmakers should visit the city for a better understanding of the issue.
I feel as though like they should just maybe visit a neighborhood in Philadelphia or walk down the streets and see what it's like to spend a day in Philadelphia, and then maybe they'll see like what we're talking about, and they won't think that it's just something that happens just because.
There have been more than 520 shootings in the city this year. Last year at this time, it was 490. For WHYY, Darrell C. Murphy.
Turnout for last Tuesday's primary in New Jersey was, by one measure, robust. Joining me to make sense of the numbers is Bergen Record reporter Herb Jackson. Herb, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Happy to help.
What does your analysis reveal?
So turnout, you know, it's not going to set anybody's hair on fire. I mean, only about 20% of the registered Democrats showed up. But that was almost double the number who showed up in 2014, which was the last midterm congressional primary. And the big reason why is there were really competitive races up and down the state, as I said, from Cape May all the way to High Point.
You cite political science professor at Rutgers University, Shauna Shamus, who succinctly says people show up when they think it matters. Is that in play here?
That's clearly what happened. We had primaries for House seats where there are open seats because members are retiring. And we also had primaries on both sides of the ballot. You had people running television commercials for House primaries, which in many years you don't even get people running television commercials for the fall election, you know, because if you have to buy television to reach New Jersey voters, you have to buy it either in the Philadelphia market and reach everybody in Pennsylvania, or you have to buy it in the New York market and reach people and maybe even in Connecticut. So you usually don't see a lot of TV, but you did in some of these competitive races. And it played out in places like the 11th District, where Congressman Rodney Frelinghuysen is retiring. That's Morris, Passaic, Essex County, a little bit of Passaic. There was 400% increase in the turnout from the Democrats. It went from about 9,100 Democrats voting in 2014 to 45,000 last week.
It begets a separate topic, but as you bring it up, it certainly is evidence of the fact that money matters.
Yeah, these candidates, a lot of them had some money to spend. In that 11th district primary, the Democrat who won, a woman named Mikey Sherrill, she spent over $1 million through the middle of May, and two of her opponents spent $800,000 combined. So there was some competition happening. There were signs, there were things in the mail that people were seeing. And some people told me, like in some of these other races, people kept hearing about the race and thought it was the fall election or something like that. I'm not sure how many people understand. In New Jersey, you can't vote in the primary if you're not a registered member of one party or the other, or you want to join the party on primary day. So that's why primaries are usually much more cozy affairs than the general election.
There's always a temptation to put this in broader perspective. And to what extent could this portend what might happen in the general election in November?
What everybody's looking at is you had three districts where there are Republicans in those congressional seats right now, where more Democrats went out and voted in the primary than Republicans. In the 2nd District, where Congressman Lobiondo is retiring, he's from Atlantic County. That includes a lot of South Jersey. In the 7th District, where Congressman Leonard Lance, his district runs across the middle of the state, he's one of the most targeted Republicans in the country right now. And in the 11th District, where Rodney Frelinghuysen is retired, in all three of those districts, more Democrats voted on Tuesday in the primaries than in the general. Now, if that plays out in the fall, you know, those seats flip. It helps Democrats get a long way toward the 23 seats they need to pick up to win in November to take control. But it's not automatically a given. Just because people aren't registered in a party don't mean they don't usually vote with one party or the other. People in Hudson County may not be registered Democrats because they usually don't have a choice in primaries, but they still vote Democratic in November. And the same thing for people in Morris County. They may vote Republican. So things are still going to have to change dramatically for this to spell out a change in November, but it's a good sign for the Democrats that they got that many people out.
Suffice to say, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is part of the impetus to get out the vote?
They were very worked up. There were grassroots groups in some of these congressional districts that have been protesting at their congressman's office practically since the beginning of last year. And a lot of this was sparked by, you know, people woke up and said, Donald Trump is president, and I have a Republican congressman. I want my congressman not to do what Donald Trump says he's going to do. And so people have been picketing. I think that helped drive Congressman Frelinghuysen and Congressman Lobiondo to retire. And it's going to be something that plays out. Can they keep that enthusiasm up? And will they show up in November?
Herb, thanks for this analysis, and looking forward to talking to you again after we see how it plays out in November.
Sure. Happy to do it.
Bergen Record reporter Herb Jackson on Newsworks Tonight. Two world leaders known for their hot tempers are about to hold an unprecedented meeting. U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un will begin their summit in Singapore this evening. Some of the Philadelphia region's tens of thousands of Korean immigrants and Korean Americans say they're cautiously optimistic that this high-stakes rendezvous will ease tensions. More from WHYY's Laura Benchoff.
In the 1960s and 70s, Korean immigrants started moving to the Philadelphia region in large numbers after the U.S. lifted restrictions on immigration from Asia. Bo Kwon Kang, a leader in the Korean American Association of Greater Philadelphia, was a part of that wave.
Yesterday, that was Sunday, right? So I went to church and everybody was talking about the summit meeting.
He says his church prayed together for a good outcome. But while Kang says he has high hopes for the meeting, he's also keeping his expectations low because talks with North Korea in the past haven't produced lasting peace.
That's always what happened. You know, they said it and then they never did what they promised. Hopefully this time it will be done.
The gulf between North Korea and the U.S. came out of the Korean War. In the 1950s, that conflict also created two neighboring but parallel societies on the Korean Peninsula, North and South Korea.
The idea of unifying a country so vastly different in terms of their political system, culture, education, health, and everything is a very daunting task.
That's Philadelphia City Councilman David Oh, who's Korean-American. He says the war also separated families, including some of his relatives.
My uncle, was separated from his wife and children and never saw them again.
Many people died waiting for diplomacy to reunite their families. Against that backdrop, any talks between North Korea and the U.S. can be seen as positive. The X factor is what these two particular leaders can achieve. At a shopping center in Elkins Park, dominated by Korean immigrant-owned businesses, insurance agent Susan Moon says she thinks the rogue nature of both world leaders helps break down the longstanding chill between the countries.
Because the way this person is, I think it's because it's Trump. it's sort of working this time around.
Neighboring business owner Jessica Kim isn't so sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just you have to wait and see what happens kind of thing. Like, who knows? Yeah. They're both kind of erratic.
Her mom, Jung-un Kim, breaks in.
Step by step.
Her daughter translates. Any change to a relationship that's been sour for so long will have to come step by step. Laura Benshoff, WHYY News.
And this program note, stay with us at 9 this evening for NPR special coverage of President Donald Trump's summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. That's tonight at 9 on WHYY-FM. The president's ongoing trade war is creating strange bedfellows on Capitol Hill. WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo reports that Pennsylvania's two Senate candidates seem to be teaming up against Republican U.S. Senator Pat Toomey in his attempt to tie Trump's hands on tariffs.
The president claims he's slapping other nations with tariffs as a matter of national security, which is causing eyes to roll here in Washington. For months, Republicans have complained about what now seems to be a full-blown trade war, but few offered proposals to curb the president. Now Pennsylvania Republican Senator Pat Toomey is proposing giving the Senate the final say on any new tariffs issued under the guise of national security.
Because I think Congress should be have some say in establishing tariff policies.
Toomey is a key Trump ally who is a reliable vote for most every aspect of his agenda, so this effort is ruffling feathers. And even President Trump is getting on the phone, trying to talk Republicans out of supporting Toomey's legislation. Republican Congressman Lou Barletta is running for the state's other Senate seat this fall. He says Toomey's proposal is misguided.
You know, I think the president has done a good job in negotiating our trade deals, and I wouldn't want to do anything to tie his hands. He's been doing pretty good so far.
Barletta says Trump needs space to work his deals.
We're not seeing the entire strategy and picture of what he's trying to get at. So, you know, again, you know, negotiating on one deal, there may be a reason that there's something else that president's looking at. So, again, I think we've got to let this president negotiate, see if we're going to get better deals.
And Barletta offers South Korea as an example.
Where the president was able to negotiate, 30% less South Korean steel coming into the country, helping our steel companies. So I think the president's doing a real good job. I think, the trade deficit that we have shows that our deals in the past have not been so good, and I don't want to do anything to tie this president's hands.
Barletta is facing off against incumbent Democratic Senator Bob Casey. The two are light years apart on tax policy, health care policy, and just about every other big-ticket item in Congress. But on trade, they're actually fairly similar. While Casey is still studying the proposal, he says he also is wary of hindering any president on trade policy.
But I am very concerned about any bill that would prevent us from having effective trade enforcement.
Casey is a fierce critic of Trump, but on trade, he actually applauds most of the president's stands.
I'm happy that he's trying to be more aggressive in terms of our trade enforcement, but he's at times implemented it in a manner that doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, having Canada on the hook for a lot of folks doesn't make sense.
That's why Casey and other Democrats are trying to nudge the president to be more precise in applying tariffs.
I'm hoping the president will focus more intensively on China, the world's greatest cheater. They cheat on intellectual property, they manipulate their currency, they cheat on trade deals, they take jobs away from Pennsylvania. They've attacked Pennsylvania directly with their Chinese army hacking of U.S. steel and a lot of our... They steal intellectual property. I mean, on and on and on.
On the other side of the Delaware River, the fight over tariffs is also creating strange alliances. South Jersey Republican Tom MacArthur sides with Casey and Barletta because he says you need one point person for the nation on trade.
Yeah, I don't think you can negotiate trade deals by committee. And the Senate, in particular, has a horrible history of accomplishing anything.
But New Jersey Republican Leonard Lance argues Congress needs to assert itself, which is why he supports Toomey's effort.
Yes, I would. I think the Congress is a co-equal branch of government, and I am a free trader.
But Lance says the growing GOP frustration with the Republican president is nothing new.
I think there has always been a debate within both parties regarding the trade issue, and so from my reading of American history, this is not new, and I observe that it occurs not only in the Republican Party, but in the Democratic Party as well.
While the president's new tariff policy is splitting former alliances on Capitol Hill, and while congressional leaders oppose the president's trade policy, they're also trying to quiet the rebellion and show unified support of President Trump. But as the summer rolls on, expect the clamor for a bill like Toomey's to grow louder. For WHYY News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Looking for a shady spot for a lunchtime picnic this week? Well, let's take advantage of near summer solstice shadows with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, I'm getting hungry. Where should we go?
Someplace that's sunny would be good. If you're outside right around lunchtime and you're standing in the sun, your shadow around that time of day is about the shortest it can be for the year. Now, as we approach summer solstice, if you were to take a look at your shadow today and then look at it a week from now, right at summer solstice, you might not see very much difference. But actually, if you take a look at other vertical objects, like fire hydrants, utility poles, buildings even, if you compare the length of that shadow at noon at another time of year, you'll find that there's significant change. In fact, if you wait until winter, you'll see that that shadow is at its longest at noon that it can be. Now, I break this down into the simplest terms. Yes, it is a little bit more complicated, but in fact, because of the way that the Earth's rotational axis is positioned as we orbit the sun, that changing position relative to the sun is what causes the shadows to be longer or shorter. So just by using shadows of ourselves, buildings, other vertical objects, we can tell something about the Earth's motion around the sun.
But again, here in the Philadelphia region, we don't get quite to that point where the sun is directly overhead.
No, in fact, we do not. We never reach that point. If we wanted to reach that point, we'd have to go south into the Bahama Islands. Somewhere around Eleuthera would work out very well, particularly on the first day of summer. That would be a perfect place for us to be.
In the Philadelphia region, with clear skies at night, what's available to be seen?
Well, we're in a great position because for us at this latitude, this time of year, by midnight, both Jupiter and Saturn are well up for observing. So we have the two largest planets of our solar system, the greatest objects for observing you can find. But an hour later, Mars joins the group also, and then we have all three planets until about 4 a.m. when Jupiter sets. For stars, Gemini is over on the western horizon right at sunset, down low. Arcturus, a bright orange star, a red giant actually, is overhead at 9 p.m. And then over to the east, the main constellation of the summer sky, Cygnus, is rising, so we have really, really great viewing.
With the mention of Mars, let's move on to tomorrow night, the Night Sky Observatory, where an author on the topic will be holding forth on the search for life on Mars.
Yes, indeed, this is a great topic, and author David Weintraub is going to talk to us about the search for life on Mars. There's lots of ways that this can be divided up, whether we think we're looking for little green men with antennas, or if we think we're looking for microorganisms. There's a story to be told about what we've found on the planet Mars so far that gives us any kind of hint at all about the possibility of some kind of microbial life. So that'll be tomorrow evening at the Night Skies at the Observatory Program at Franklin Institute. We start at 7. You can find out more information on our website, but it'll be a great time to take a look at these giant planets through our telescope on the fourth floor and also on our fifth floor rooftop observing deck.
We have a moment left. Let's look out to Saturday evening.
Coming up this Saturday, June 16th, the Delaware Valley Amateur Astronomers are hosting a star party out at the Model Airplane Flying Field at Valley Forge National Historic Park. It's going to be a great evening with all kinds of telescopes of different sizes. You can find out more information about their star party at dvaa.org.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. Students around the region are graduating from high school this week, and among them is Kevin Davis Jr., a senior at Mastery Pickett Charter School in the Germantown section of Philadelphia. Davis is not the type to stand out, but he is a marvel of consistency, and after 13 years of doing everything that's asked of him, he's finally asking for a little help, as WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt explains.
Kevin Davis Jr. has a pretty standard routine before school.
Yeah, wake up about 6:30 every morning, wash my face, watch a little bit of news, get washed up and dressed, smell good before I leave out the house, tell my mom and dad I love them before I leave, go to school with my little sister.
The remarkable thing about this unremarkable ritual is how many times Davis has repeated it. The soon-to-be graduate has never missed a day of school, not in pre-K and not in any of the grades since. Ask him why, and you'll get a little perspective from the Zen of Kevin.
I know if I miss something, I'm always going to be behind, and I don't ever want to be behind. I always want to be ahead.
Davis, if you hadn't noticed, is not the talkative type. But his teacher, Lila Corrigan, has always sensed a strong, quiet sense of self.
He just keeps saying, I want to be different. I want to do something different. And he realized pretty early on that this is really a very simple way of being different.
Here's another way Davis wants to be different. He wants to become a chef, a famous chef, with ambitions a lot louder than his voice.
I want to open more than one restaurant, so I want to be like worldwide.
And to get there, he wants to attend culinary school, but the price tag is $25,000. And even though Davis has done everything within his control to this point, he's looking at a big bundle of student loans. His teacher, Corrigan, has started a GoFundMe page to help him raise money and reduce his debt. She's calling it Kevin's 13-year commitment because that's how long his attendance streak has lasted. And he fully expects to keep that streak going this fall. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.